Good evening and God bless you tonight. We come to you in the name of Jesus and we're glad to be in Oregon. It's certainly prettier than where we live right now, even though we enjoy the hills and mountains. But as we were flying in over those snow-covered mountains and then came to all this green wonderland, it's just part of God's creation that I'm sure you wouldn't want to leave, but we want to leave it someday for a better place than this yet. I covet your prayers as we look at this subject of music. I know for many, the subject of music is an emotional one, and they'd just as soon not have it discussed. But you know, we are better off if we just face reality. And we just look at where, and in fact, I think our Christianity should be the kind that scratches where it itches. And so I think we just need to be common enough and ordinary enough to just look at life as we live it and look at the issues that we face in our time and see what does God have to say and just be blessed. Is there a reason why Dad and Mom or Grandpa and Grandma feel the way they do about some things? And no doubt there is. And we want to just explore some things because I trust they feel the way they do because of how the Lord feels. This evening, I want to look at two things, and I'm going to just wait to give you the title for a little bit here, except to say that we do want to talk about the decline of culture. Because a lot of issues that we face today are a result of culture declining, and the changes are somewhat subtle. We see things and we're shocked by what we see. But there's a tendency after a while to get used to it. And so that's what we'd like to look at the decline of culture out of necessity this evening. And then we want to look at another element that stands in contrast to that. Tomorrow evening, Lord willing, I'd like to discuss in both sessions. These are about hour long sessions, two each night. I know that's asking quite a bit, but it won't last long. Monday will come soon. But tomorrow night, I'd like to spend both sessions on a question that seems to be at the root of the problem that we face in our circles. And that is, and not just in our circles, in the larger evangelical circle, it's a big problem. It's probably the most significant problem in music. And that's that they question whether music itself is a moral issue. They say, sure, words are important. And I've had folks in our own circles say the same thing, that words matter. Words are important. But the message comes from the words. The music itself does not communicate a message. It's the words that matter. And the whole Christian rock culture is based on the premise that the words are all that matters and not the music. Now, we could say, we could very simply, in the process of research, say, look what happens to the words after a while. Because there's also disintegration of words. Something begins to happen to the words. But the defense is usually that music itself does not give a message on its own, all by itself. All music is created by God, they say. And so, consequently, any kind, all kinds of music, as long as it's music and not noise. And what is music? Well, we were just studying it in seventh grade science this past week, that music is your even vibration, your regular vibration, and noise is your irregular, your uneven vibration. Well, we won't get into a lot of such technical things. But is that true? I think we have to cross that bridge. That's very critical. Saturday evening, Lord willing, we'd like to take a look at some of the pressure that has come from the larger Christian, so-called Christian circle outside, and how that pressure and how that compromise has filtered down to pressure those who love a cappella music. And so it's kind of a long 3-day journey to get to where it really scratches where it itches, but it's of necessity. We have to lay a foundation first. Sunday, Lord willing, then, we'd like to take a look more at the characteristics of songs that are part of the gift God gave the Christian church. Just being able to sing Savior, Breathe, and Evening Blessing this evening was a blessing. And even the words of those songs will speak to what we're going to be sharing this evening already. Christian music is a gift to the Christian church. And when we take it lightly, then we open ourselves to all sorts of other beliefs and a loss of conviction in this area. And then we also want to look at some steps if we have a struggle, how we can get back to where we belong. And then I'd like to conclude Sunday night with a concluding session on just what lies behind these hymns that have blessed us over and over and over again. What were their experiences? And we'll soon discover that usually it is either revival or suffering that lies behind the hymns that have blessed us over and over again. This evening, I invite you to open your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Years ago, when I was teaching in a winter Bible school, one Saturday morning, no, it was a Friday morning. Friday morning was usually student chapel. I think that's kind of how the winter Bible schools often have. I'm not sure. And one Friday morning, before the student chapel of the morning, there was the students announced a prayer and fasting service. Now, that was kind of a strange thing for students to do, because usually that was Wednesday noon. For those of you who've attended, I attended as a teenager, attended Carbon Hill Bible School, and where I learned to know some of the Oregon people first. And we had a real blessing usually those Wednesday noons. I mean, I know there was a lot of people turned out for supper Wednesday evening, it seemed like, and the cooks made a special supper, and I wondered sometimes how much we really lost that day, from the food standpoint, but we did gain some spiritual lessons, and it was a good lesson. A good lesson to teach young people that fasting should accompany our prayers. And it should become a part of our experience. And then I think that's the reason why they said, some of the students announced that we're going to have a prayer and fasting service Friday morning instead of breakfast for those who want to. And they invited the faculty. I still remember that morning, though it was a good number of years ago. A number of the faculty chose to come instead of going down to breakfast, as a few others did. And a lot of the students were there. And the moderator asked this simple question: what is the greatest need in America today? And everybody just sat there quiet. Nobody answered. So he asked the question the second time: what is the greatest need in America today? And still the students sat there and did not answer. Neither the girls nor the boys. But an old brother on the faculty, the oldest one, and the students lovingly called him Moses, because he did look like a patriarch. He had a long beard, and he looked like he just came right out of the Old Testament and came to Bible school to teach his classes. He rose to his feet and he answered the question: what is the greatest need in America today? And this is what he said: the fear of God. And then he sat down. Now, the moderator that morning really was in cooperation with the student chapel planning committee, who was saying instead that the greatest need is in our families, for husbands and wives to love each other, for sons and daughters to relate to their fathers and mothers as they ought. And that's what was pursued, and that's what the prayer and fasting time was about, and that's what the chapel was about. And they were on target. That is a significant, very strong need in America today. And it was a very memorable morning. And not only did we pray, as we often did during Bible reading and prayer times, for those of our number and those of our families and our cousins and our nephews and nieces, whoever, that had wanted to go out and taste the world for a while. They were often on our prayer lists. That morning we prayed for every brother and sister of every student at Bible school that was in the prayer session by name who were Christian. And there was something very satisfying and something very right about that. I know we should pray for those, and we do, and we are burdened for those from among us who have gone out. But folks, we better be busy praying for those who are here tonight. And for those of our sons and daughters who are faithful, they have their times of discouragement, and some things are not always going well for them. And they struggle. And yet if they know that our prayers are reaching out to them and our encouragement is reaching out to them, and they feel that warmth in the family, and they feel that warmth in the church, they don't want to go out where it's cold. They want to be where the warmth is and where the interrelating is and where the prayers exist. It was a wonderful morning. But the moderator that morning could, however, not forget, even though the emphasis was on family that morning, he could not forget. In fact, the moderator happened to be yours truly. But he could not forget what that old brother said. Fear of God. What did he mean by that? Some years later, we lived in Kelowna, Iowa, which we did for 13 years. One Sunday after church, we had a little lunch there, a pastor and four of his brethren. And we went north to Anamosa, Iowa, maybe 60 miles north or something, to a reformatory, a men's reformatory. And the four of us brethren sang. Our pastor preached. We sang some more. And then we had about 25 minutes where we could discuss, just meet with the inmates and talk about life and talk about what they're feeling sad about and their experience, and hopefully have some of them open up their hearts to the Lord. In the process of that discussion, one inmate said to me, "I liked your singing." And I don't know why necessarily I was inspired to just ask him, "Well, thank you, sir, but what do you think about rock music?" And he said, "I don't like rock." Now, at this point, he had given no evidence of being Christian, but I was surprised that this convict is saying he doesn't like rock music. But then he added these two things. He said, "But I don't condemn it either, because I believe it has something to say." Well, now he had me somewhat confused. He doesn't like it, but he doesn't condemn it because it has something that it communicates. Now, I still, to this day, would disagree with the second thought he had. There is a reason why we should be clear and understand from it. But his third thought speaks volumes. Rock has a world to say to us. Has a lot to say to us. And it had a lot to say to us before it even entered the evangelical churches as it has. I find it absolutely incredible to hear our phone ring at home, at our own house, and people are calling and saying they've gotten hold of some solid a cappella singing from some source. And they're calling, they're saying, "You know what? We go to church. We don't have this in church anymore. We don't know. We don't. There is something so restful. There's something so peaceful. There's something so right about this. And we're not used to hearing it. We go to church and we almost feel like leaving it or stopping our ears because of how noisy our church has become." And they do it all for the name of doing it to help save the young people. Bob Jones, the one who started Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina, said years ago, and I'll repeat this possibly Saturday night. He said, "When error creeps into the Christian church, it will creep in through the field of evangelism." That's a point to ponder. Now let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 30. In chapter 29, verse 29, we have these words. "The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law." Chapter 30. "And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon thee, the blessing and the curse which I have set before thee, and thou shalt call them to mind among all the nations, whither the Lord thy God hath driven thee, and shall return unto the Lord thy God, and shall obey his voice according to all that I command thee this day, thou and thy children with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that then the Lord thy God will turn thy captivity and have compassion upon thee, and will return and gather thee from all the nations whither the Lord thy God hath scattered thee. If any of thine be driven out of the unto the utmost or the outmost parts of heaven, from thence will the Lord thy God gather thee, and from thence will he fetch thee. And the Lord thy God will bring thee into a land which thy fathers possessed, and thou shalt possess it. And he will do thee good, and multiply thee above thy fathers. And the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart, and the heart of thy seed, to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. And the Lord thy God will put all these curses upon thine enemies and on them that hate thee, which persecuted thee. And thou shalt return and obey the voice of the Lord and do all his commandments, which I command thee this day. And the Lord thy God will make thee plenteous in every work of thine hand, in the fruit of thy body, and in the fruit of thy cattle, and in the fruit of thy land for good. For the Lord will again rejoice over thee for good as he rejoiced over thy fathers. If thou shalt hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes, which are written in this book of the law, and if thou turn unto the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul, for this commandment which I command thee this day, it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldst say, who shall go up for us to heaven, and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldst say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it? But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply, and the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But if thy heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shalt be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish, and that ye shall not prolong your days upon the land whither thou pass over Jordan to go to possess it. I called heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, and that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life and the length of thy days, and that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abram, to Isaac, and to Jacob, and to give them. And chapter 31 goes on to say how Moses went and spake these things to the children of Israel, because this is the message God gave Moses. And he said, today I'm 120 years old. I don't know if that means that was his 120th birthday when he spoke these words. And he begins to tell them something, and I want you to notice verse 6 in chapter 31. After all this choice between good and evil, blessing and cursing, he says in verse 6 of chapter 31, be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them, for the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Then Moses called Joshua, and he said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of a good courage, for thou must go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. Verse 8, and the Lord, he it is that doth go before thee. He will be with thee. He will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed. I would like to suggest at the very beginning this evening, some of the problem that we face in this whole music realm, and in the music listening habits of our people and our closely related denominations and constituencies, is a result of fear. Now we have this scripture here that says you should not fear. Be brave. But I see peer pressure as being powerful. I teach school. And I don't claim to be the top school teacher at all. But I've observed a lot of things the past 20 years in the classroom. And I've observed the difference between positive and powerful and good peer pressure and negative peer pressure. And I've watched how younger ones are afraid to do what they know they should do because of older ones who will give them that scowl or give them that look or roll their eyes, you know, because they have done right instead of, you know, they're just not courageous enough. Fear. We face a lot of fear. Fear is a basic instinct in us. And really, fear is not all bad. You know, in the animal kingdom, is fear good or is it bad? There would be many, many, many an animal would be a predator's dinner if it weren't for fear. Fear is not all bad. Fear can serve as a protection. But there's a big difference between the right kind of fear and the wrong kind of fear. There are a lot of irrational fears we have in our time. We're afraid of things we should not be afraid of. And then, we sometimes don't fear things we should fear. Phobias, somebody has said, is like irrational fears. They are based on falsehood. Genuine and good fear is based on truth. And you know what makes us afraid? There's two things about fear that make us afraid. If suddenly, and I hope this will never happen, but if suddenly there was a copperhead in the center aisle here. Or for you school teachers, if you suddenly, there was a live copperhead in your classroom, all your rules about orderly dismissal and going by rows and everything, they would evaporate. I mean, everyone would be flying out the door. Why? Because we have a basic instinct of fear. And we'd have fear if there's a big copperhead. Maybe you don't know what copperheads are in Oregon. I don't know. We have them down the creek at our house, near our house. And my neighbor likes to come over and shoot them. And I don't mind. We had a customer in our strawberry patch last summer. He comes running out of the strawberry patch. And said, there's a snake up there in the strawberries. So I went up and I killed it. And I thought the shape of it was a poisonous snake. Somebody later thought it wasn't. Had another customer pull in alongside our stone wall. And she got out of the passenger side. And she comes up to me. She said, there's a snake curled up on top of that post. And she didn't want to go back to her car. Well, I went and killed it. That wasn't a copperhead, but killed it anyway. But you know, there's something. Why are we scared of copperheads? At Christian Aid Open House a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, Johnny Miller related a children's story. How he'd gone hunting as a 17-year-old. One of his first times. Double-barrel shotgun. But it was rained. He went out in this swampy area, and here was this snake coiled up. And he saw that it was a rattlesnake. And he wanted that trophy. That's the end of a rattlesnake. And it just lay there motionless. He took a piece of dirt or something out of the sludging, threw it down on the thing, and it just bounced up and down the swamp. And he was just about ready to pick it up when he thought, well, maybe he should get a stick. Because he didn't really like snakes.
So he took a stick off of a tree and he trimmed it all off, and he reached down with that stick to pick it up. And just as he reached down, he discovered it wasn't a rattlesnake at all. It was a water moccasin, and a big one, and it was very alive. And that head just shot up right at him. He said he never remembers cocking his old double barrel, and he doesn't remember pulling the trigger. But he did see the head disappear of that snake in just a instant. But he said he was shaking as he left the place. Fear. Why fear? Because of the power of that snake's venom to kill. And because of the presence. If you take one of those two things away, we lose the fear. I could ask the young boys here, do your sisters, are they quiet when they see a mouse? And if it's a live one that ran across, they're not quiet. They're very vocal. Why? They respond. They panic. They scream when they see something, right? It's fear. Because it's present, and I wouldn't want to insult them and say, may I have a mistaken idea that it's powerful, but it's certainly undesirable to them. But all you'd have to do is kill that snake, and suddenly it's no longer powerful, even though it's present, and everybody relaxes, right? And they gather around to take a look at it. So what I'm suggesting is, if one element is missing out of those two, then the fear goes away. Now suppose that the other element's missing. Suppose it's not present, but it's still powerful. Well, what about, I didn't think of asking Brother Steve, are there any bad poisonous snakes in this area? Are there any in along the west coast anywhere? Aren't they powerful? Why are you not afraid of them this evening? Why do you sit here relaxed? It's because they're not present, right? They may be ever so powerful, but they're not present. So our fears have to do with what's both present and powerful. You see, the two things have to work together. And Moses is seeing that there are things that the children of Israel are going to fear that they're going to encounter. And then they're going to think they're very powerful. The 10 spies said they're too powerful. Two of them said, no, we're well able to conquer. Now, I guess I can jump ahead. Let's just go ahead and read verse 12 and 13. Verse 12. Gather the people together, men and women and children, and thy stranger that is within thy gates, that they may hear, and that they may learn, and fear the Lord your God, and observe to do all the words of this law. Did you catch the instruction there that you ought to fear? Verse 13. And that their children, which have not known anything, may hear, and learn to fear the Lord your God, as long as ye live in the land whither ye go over Jordan to possess it. Now in verse 6 and 8, we have read twice, fear not, fear not. In verse 12 and 13, we are reading now, fear, you ought to fear, you should fear. You say, well, how's this? Folks, there are two kinds of fears. And we've already described the first kind. The first kind of fear is just a normal human fear that we have when our safety is threatened. Fear of people, fear of death, fear of failure, fear of injury. I grew up on a farm in central Kansas. We had silos, several silos. And when I was a boy, we threw the silage out by hand. It's a lot of work, but it made strong young boys, I guess. And I remember thinking one time when I came out of the silo into the chute, It would be fun to go down the outside of the silo. The silo was quite full. It'd be fun to go down the outside instead of down the chute. Down the chute is mundane. It's just how you always go. So this time I crawled up the top of the chute and went out the outside and started going down there. And then it occurred to me it'd be fun to see how fast you can go down the outside. I tell you, Kansas, I guess, has some foolhardy farm boys sometimes. But I suddenly realized that I was falling over backward and that neither hand had hold of a ring. And I experienced fear that I should have experienced before I even tried it. But I experienced fear. Fear just went through me. I couldn't help but in an instant know that we had concreted around the bottom of that silo. And that when I hit the bottom, there will be very serious injury. And I just remember kind of thrusting my hands against the staves to try to get hold of a ring yet. And fortunately, I found one. I think a different boy came down than had started down. I related that one time, and my older brother happened to be present. And he said, "Do you know what happened next?" I said, "No, I don't know what happened next." He said, "You wouldn't come down." He said, "I had to crawl up the outside and pry your hands loose to make you come down." That's fear. That was legitimate fear, and I shouldn't have been so foolhardy in the first place. But is that a different fear than the kind of fear we have in verse 12 and 13, where you're supposed to fear? Absolutely. Because when you fear the Lord your God, then you have the solution for all your irrational fears. Why? Because we have a big word we attach to the Lord and we call Him omnipresent. What does omnipresent mean? It means He is everywhere present. That means He's here tonight. We have another big word that we attach to God and we call Him omnipotent. What does omnipotent mean? Omnipotent means all-powerful. And so what the Scripture is teaching us is if we begin to trust God to be ever present in every possible circumstance of life, He's there, as for us as Christians. And He is all-powerful, that one single fear is both rational and the cure for all irrational fears. Is that possible? Why? Why not? Because He's present. Why then would not the fear of God be the solution for every single music problem that anyone has ever had in our constituencies? When we reverence God more than our peers. When we reverence God, when we see that He is here, He is present. And there are some scriptures that really point out how this is to be. I won't, for sake of time, go there this evening, maybe tomorrow night. I'll go there. I tell you, fear is a gift. And so is this. I'm very ready. Thank you. This is a reverential fear. This is a fear that says that God, I can hide myself in God. And I bless God that I'm able to say this evening that I could name you. I won't do that tonight. But I can name you young people right now who are experiencing that kind of reverence for God. They are very unashamed of their stand in the area of music. They are clear-spirited. They are thoroughly enjoying life. They have some ups and downs. They relate easily to adults. And I just bless God because I see in them the fear of God at work. And folks, my heart is bleeding tonight for the many youth who don't share that freedom, who don't have that clarity, who don't have that enjoyment. I'd like to take a look at a few things, and I appreciate you letting me look at you while I, or face you while I use this reverse chalkboard. We use the term music. Where does music come from? What word does it come from? Well, the root, and often we can learn a lot from the roots of words, but the root of the word music actually comes from the word muse. And the word muse simply means to think. In fact, in the psalmist says at one point, I muse on the work of thy hands. I ponder, I consider. And I think that it's almost like this is at the root. This is what we need in order to develop the fear of God. Music is not something bad tonight, folks. Music is a precious gift. And I think this, the kind of music we're talking about here, is devotional in nature. That's a very simplistic definition, perhaps, but I believe it is. I believe it is devotional in nature. I don't know if all of you can see. I'm not one. I don't feel bad one bit if you move up to the center parts of those outside benches so you can see. Now, we can use root words and we can do things with them. As any student who likes English grammar or any teacher who enjoys English grammar like I do, there's all kinds of things you can do once you start working with roots. You can begin to change the prefixes and you change the meanings, you affect the meanings. You can add suffixes to them and influence the meanings and changes the positions of things. And I'm going to demonstrate it with a word like theist. A theist is a person who believes in God. And so when we say that somebody is a polytheist, poly has the idea of many. Well, you're probably talking to somebody that's into Hinduism, who may have 1,000 gods. And how could he ever worship them all? I don't know. Maybe those who are into pantheism, who see God in everything, and God is everything, and you are God too, they say. And so, then you have mono, is another prefix that you could put in front of theist. A monotheist is a person who, mono means one, like dialogue means two. So when you have a dialogue, it's two people talking with each other. When you have a monologue, you're just talking to yourself. And I hope you enjoy that. But anyway, so we have mono. I'm sorry, I didn't spell it right there. Monotheist. A monotheist is a person who believes in one God. What if you would use another abbreviation? Let's say we use the prefix, the very simple one-letter prefix, A. And we get the idea of this is one who believes in God, and this has the idea of not. An atheist, we know very easily what that is. That's a person who does not believe in God. He tries to survive life without God. And tomorrow evening I want to discuss atheism with you briefly, because atheism has something in common with contemporary Christian music. Has something in common with the Christian rock that's being used in many, many churches, even within 20 miles of here. It's used all across this country. There's been a tremendous shift to it. And so, what does atheism have in common with the Christian rock world? Something that should alarm us. Because the Christian rock world is primarily a violation of the doctrine of the Godhead. Primarily, it's a theological problem, but we're not near there yet. Okay, let's put this thing up here. And let's put a M-E-N back here, make a noun out of it. And we have the word amusement.
Well, muse means, what does that mean? That means to think, right? And if awe has the idea of not, what's the purpose of amusement? Well, a purpose of amusement, of course, is to refresh. It's to give you, it's to restore, to, yes? Why do you think that there's, why do you think there are all the DVDs out there that are out there today? Why is there a tremendous escalation in all the potential videos and all the programs and all the things that people are looking at on the internet? What's it all about? Is it refreshing American society? Can you say there's not a prison in Oregon that has an inmate in it anymore? They've just emptied out because amusement has so refreshed and so met the psychological needs of all the people in Oregon that they're just empty. The police are, the cruisers aren't even riding around. They're just sitting parked anymore. There's nothing to do. The schools are safe. No guns are going to school anymore. And the boys are treating the girls respectfully like they should. Treat them as queens and as princesses. And things are going so well in our culture. There are no rapes. There's no domestic violence anymore. And the babies are all treated as babies ought to be treated. And they're not put behind the wheels of semis so that when the driver unwittingly takes off, it gets rid of the baby, the unwanted baby. As I saw when I was up in, I mean, I didn't see it happen in Kitchener, Ontario. You know very, oh, you say that's Canada. Okay, I think we know this is totally senseless, the direction we're going with this, because you know very well that amusement has not solved America's problems. Amusement has not made safer schools. And I'm not only talking about Columbine and some of the colleges and some of the military establishments like Mount Hood or wherever. Amusement has not made these places safe. And yet people are engrossed in them. People constantly, they're riding on a school bus. They have to listen. They have to listen to it in the hallways. They have to listen to it everywhere. They say, I cannot bear silence. And I've had young people tell me that. I cannot bear silence. But let me ask you simply, has amusement brought a graphic restfulness, if you can put those two words together, in America? Of course not. Prisons are overcrowded. They hardly know where to go with people. And judges are hard put to give proper sentences because of the crowded conditions. They don't know where to put them all. And so they put, a number of years ago, they put a whole bunch of them out in tents in the Arizona desert and guarded them there for a while because there was no facilities enough to hold them. And the prisoners complained bitterly. Said, this is awful that we have to stay out. What do you think we are, criminals or something? You see, in music, this is a powerful characteristic of music. Music has order. I mean, this is a governing element of music. Music has order. Music has regularity. Music has evenness about it. There's something predictable about music. But in amusement, it's the exact opposite. Amusement, if we call this devotional, I would call amusement basically selfish music. People say, well, you can touch whatever you want to, but don't touch my music. You can discuss nonconformity, you can discuss non-resistance, you can discuss other issues that are a little bit touchy, but please don't touch my music. I know of young people who've had privileges, opportunities, even as is yours this evening. And they went to town instead for supper. We are not going to listen to teaching on music. Before the week was up, they were there because on the way to town, they had an accident. And God still said, Balaam, turn around. You're not doing what I want you to do. Well, I shouldn't say it that way, maybe, but folks, people's inability to just face reality in the area of music is a very, very selfish thing. Very selfish thing. And I just trust you here. You're the kind of folk that will let the shades up and let the light in. And to just give it a serious thought and not make an evaluation the first night or the second night or the third night. Wait till the fourth day to see how these things fit together and say, the Lord wants to change my life. The Lord wants to speak to me. I know my mom and dad have no idea. And this has happened so many times. And I hurt for the parents, and I hurt for the teenagers who are hiding it from their parents. And I hurt for teenagers who've come and told me, my dad listens to this stuff. And I'm talking about circles just almost identical to what we have here this evening. They say, I struggle with it. Yeah, I've struggled with it, but so does my dad. He listens to it. The Lord has a higher standard for us, folks. The Lord wants victory in our lives. But we have to be open to Him. And we have to be willing to just let Him be our fear and not the other things. We also have to be willing to become devotional in nature and not selfish. And I think it's rather important, quite important, that we begin to see that music has order in it, whereas amusement is full of chaos, full of disorder. So much chaos. I'll come back to that. Vance Havner, years ago, and some of you have read some of his writings, made this observation. He said, you know, the word Christian is a noun. In the numerous parts of speech that we usually talk about in English grammar, Christian is a noun. It's the name of a person, place, or thing, right? And so we can name people, person, your people here. There are a lot of Christians here tonight. But Christians are not only a noun, but Christian can also be another part of speech. And my students were struggling this very kind of thing last week, not with the word Christian, but with other words that are sometimes noun, but are used in a different form of speech. For example, you can take the word Christian and you can use it as an adjective. Now, we're almost finished with English grammar. I'm not going to pursue a lot more of it tonight. But you can use the word Christian as an adjective. For example, an adjective describes something. So what kind of a church are we here tonight? Is this Muslim? No, it isn't. It's a Christian church. What kind of school will the children go to tomorrow morning? They'll go to a Christian school. What kind of home are they going to go to tonight? A Christian home. Do you see how the word Christian describes? It's not only a noun that names a person, but it is also something that describes a person. Now, Vance's observation was that what the world is needing in our time are Christian Christians. And suddenly, that makes sense. He is saying that what we need are people whose form and content are in harmony. What do we mean by that? I heard somebody say that in New Jersey. That I don't know if he even hardly knows Mennonites. And I began to ponder it, and I was astounded what he just said when he said that. Form and content must be in harmony. In our day, we are hearing a lot about it's just a matter of the heart. Your heart's got to be right. It's a matter of the heart.
That's content.
And then the scriptures talk about people who have the form, but they deny the power. They don't have the godliness. They have the form, all right. They look like Christians, but they'll hear those horrible words at death. Sorry, I never knew you. And while others thought they might go to heaven, but they weren't sure, folks, none of us here tonight, none of us here want to be the kind of people where everybody has to pretty well wish us to heaven. They don't know if we'll make it or not. Because our lifestyle is such that they just, I know we go to church and usually we get by well enough we can take communion, but just by so little. Folks, form and content needs to be in harmony. And it's so disgusting to the world around us. I know our son, he was only 4 or 5 years old. First time he saw a plain person smoke. And he just stood there and he just was shocked. He couldn't believe what he saw. You know, he should have never have needed to ever see that. Form. We had, and I'm not picking on that branch at all, but we had two of them at our revival meetings last Sunday night. One of them was a Christian, and the other one wasn't. And I saw a circle of about 7 men around the one who wasn't. And they were having a lively discussion with him. I hope they were gracious enough with him that he saw the Spirit of God in them. And that he too, he probably wouldn't have come if he wasn't searching. Folks, it is disgusting to people when we have form and we don't have the heart. But how is it with the person who goes to, like this boy did, who went to Canada years back before there were cell phones, for 2 years of woodcutting with a secular crew? And he was a fairly young Christian. I don't know if he's his upper teens or lower 20s, but his parents, with reluctance, let him go up there to cut wood. When he came back at the end of the 2 years or however long it was, you know, he had lots of tales to tell, but the parents' important question was, how did you make out as a Christian with this secular crew that he was a part of? He said, it was no problem at all. He said, they never found out I was a Christian. Well, then was he one? The people who insist that it's all a matter of the heart, let me ask them a simple question, and maybe we'll just ask it together. If you insist on being a Christian in your heart, but there is no outward evidence of that Christianity, let me ask you, of what value is that Christianity? How's that ever going to help anyone? How's it going to help you? How are you ever going to meet the needs of the life all around us? How's it ever going to bless anyone? So what we're really saying is, yes, absolutely, we need to be Christians. This is talking about us. There is something that has to take place inside of us. And there has to be some kind of evidence outside of us that is a fruit, a byproduct of what's inside of us. We have out and we have in. And so what we are really needing today is we need a lot of Christians. So that when people look at us, they don't just think, oh, it's because they're Mennonites that they do this or that, they respond this way or that way. But they sense there is something godly taking place. And the reason we are like this in combination is because this
devotional kind of music has helped establish a proper honor, respect, and fear of God, if you please. A right view of God. The music question, I repeat, is a theological question. It has to do with our view of God. And when we respect God, when we honor God, then, and it tells us, just learn to fear the Lord, your God, and observe to do the words of this law, and that their children, which have not known anything, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, as long as ye live in the land whither ye go over Jordan to possess it. There is our answer, the fear of God. Now, I'm going to let you stand. We're going to take a little break. We'll have a song with the song leader, just maybe from your seat. Or if you want to come up here, that's fine. You can have a song. If you need to slip out for a drink or just a little break, that's fine. But I want to get started with the next session real soon. So let's stand.